Patriots who have been badly and unfairly treated for so long go home with love and in peace. But he added, remember this day forever as if he were potentially enjoying it.
They actually admitted to the crime. I mean, they admitted, his lawyers admitted that the violence was foreseeable, which is a key element in the crime that Trump stands accused of. They repeatedly suggested that Trump should just be indicted by the criminal justice system, which is not something you often hear from a defense attorney. And then at the key point, when they were asked by Murkowski and Collins, two Republicans, what did the president know and when did the president know it? They acted like the mere question was an anathema, like they couldn't just call up, like they never called up their client and asked him, when did you know that the riot was happening? They acted like that was information that we do not have available.
When they, the police, still barricaded and being attacked with poles, he said in his video to the people attacking them, we love you. You're very special. What more could we possibly need to know about President Trump's state of mind? We humbly ask you to convict President Trump for the crime for which he is overwhelmingly guilty of. Because if you don't, if we pretend this didn't happen, or worse, if we let it go unanswered, who's to say it won't happen again?
Lead House Manager Jamie Raskin explained the president's riot squad was nothing new. Something similar happened months before January 6th, when a mob overtook the Michigan Capitol.
This Trump-inspired mob may indeed look familiar to you. Confederate battle flags, MAGA hats, weapons, camo army gear, just like the insurrectionists who showed up and invaded this chamber on January 6th.
Prompting Us Weekly to ask, who treasoned it better? Then Joaquin Castro reminded the jurors that democracy takes work.
The world is watching and wondering whether we are who we say we are. We must stand up for the rule of law, because the rule of law doesn't just stand up by itself.
You know, I'm not afraid of Donald Trump running again in 4 years. I'm afraid he's going to run again and lose, because he can do this again.
Impeachment is not to punish, but to prevent. We are not here to punish Donald Trump. We are here to prevent the seeds of hatred that he planted from bearing any more fruit.
I just don't understand why everyone still insists on taking Donald Trump down. He is smart. He is nice. He's in shape. Last fall, he died of COVID and didn't even tell nobody. And now everybody's saying he attempted a coup. He didn't attempt a coup. He is coup. He's the coolest guy I know.
Yeah, maybe the coolest guy ever?
I think honesty's always the best policy.
You believe that?
No, I was lying.
Raskin said this case was much worse than just somebody yelling fire in a crowded theater.
It's more like a case where the town fire chief, who's paid to put out fires, sends a mob not to yell fire in a crowded theater, but to actually set the theater on fire. And who then, when the fire alarms go off and the calls start flooding into the fire department asking for help, does nothing but sit back, encourage the mob to continue its rampage, and watch the fire spread on TV with glee and delight.
Former President Donald Trump tonight declared not guilty of the impeachment charge he incited insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th.
And he is hereby acquitted of the charge in said article.
7 Republican senators voting with Democrats to convict.
And true to his form, Trump got acquitted 43-57. This dude just loves losing the popular votes.
The most bipartisan Senate impeachment vote in history, but far short of the two-thirds majority needed to convict.
Once again, as with the Mueller investigation, as with the SDNY investigation, Donald Trump has proven himself to be above the law and out of the grasp of any accountability for his conduct.
Senators came up with A really amazing and bullshit excuse that even if Trump was guilty, they couldn't do anything about it because he's already out of office. And nobody rolled around in that bullshit more than my man, Mitch McConnell.
There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. We have no power to convict and disqualify a former office holder who is now a private citizen. As an ordinary citizen, unless the statute of limitations is run, still liable for everything he did while he's in office. Didn't get away with anything yet. Yet. We have a criminal justice system in this country. We have civil litigation. And former presidents are not immune from being accountable by either one.
Wow. Yet another profile in courage from Mitch McConnell. Basically, what he's saying is Trump caused the riots. Trump is super guilty. And Mitch just hopes that someday someone else will do something about it.
Trump fired back today. He was mad with a long statement. He's not allowed to tweet, so he has to write letters now. He wrote, "The Republican Party can never again be respected or strong with political leaders like Senator Mitch McConnell at its helm. In 2020, I received the most votes of any sitting president in history. Almost 75 million. That had nothing to do with anything. Mitch McConnell begged for my strong support and endorsement. Without my endorsement, he would have lost and lost badly. Mitch is a dour, sullen, and unsmiling political hack. And if Republican senators are going to stay with him, they will not win again."
In this post-fact world, there are a few basic facts about the January 6th insurrection that even Republicans have generally been able to agree on. That it was, in fact, an armed insurrection at the Capitol, and that it put the lives of Americans, including members of Congress and Mike Pence, in danger. That's why a new talking point today from one of Trump's allies stands out. Even for the Republicans. What you're about to hear is a blatant lie, a blatant distortion, not rooted in truth, from Republican Senator Ron Johnson. Listen.
The fact of the matter is, this didn't seem as like an armed insurrection to me. I mean, armed, when you think here of armed, don't you think of firearms?
Mm-hmm.
Here's questions I would have liked to ask. How many firearms were confiscated? How many shots were fired? I'm only aware of one. If that was a planned armed insurrection, man, you are really a bunch of idiots.
To call that an armed insurrection, it was the most pitiful armed insurrection anybody could ever possibly imagine. I mean, the one guy in the Senate chambers there, he had plastic wrist ties. You know, what was he expecting to do? Literally go up to, you know, Mike Pence and capture him?
Right,
and
take him under arrest. I mean, citizen's arrest.
It's absurd.
What? Was it really that bad? It's today's GOP. Capitol police officers on the scene didn't feel that way.
Multiple capital injuries! Multiple capital injuries!
1318.
812 to 5th, and we're coming around from the south side.
To be advised, the speed
ended. Intel, we're be advised. You got a group of about 50 charging up the hill on the west front, just north of the stairs. They're approaching the wall now.
They're starting to dismantle their reviewing stands and throwing metal poles at us. Cruiser 50, give me DSO up here now! DSO! Multiple law enforcement entries! DSO, get up here! You can hear the explosion go on up here. I know the fireworks are off, but they're starting to explode explosives.
Here's what else we know. NBC News reports that multiple guns, ammunition, and other weapons were seized from rioters. Federal officials also say that right-wing militia groups coordinated and planned their attack on January 6th.
I had a nightmare, a terrible nightmare. I dreamed that you were here and you were leaving.
That's real, none of it. You're in a mental institution. You've been with us now for 6 years.
For the last 6 years, she's been in an undifferentiated type of schizophrenia.
Poppy's delusion is multi-layered. She believes she's some type of hero.
The Slayer. Having these flashes. Hallucinations, I guess. You've never been in a room. What? I love that kind of... I want to be healthy again. What do I have to do?
But I think Trump might even have a third impeachment in him. 8 months from now, Congress could just be like, oh, damn it, we just found out that Trump sold the Declaration of Independence on eBay.
Oh, I hope someone does something about it, but I vote to acquit.
Thanks this week for the songs from Husker Du, the Everly Brothers, and Rem, and thanks for the clips and excerpts from The Late Show. Donald Trump, Jr. Donald Trump. The Onion Public Radio. Seth Meyers. Stephen Colbert. Diana DeGette. Stacey Plaskett. Jonah Hughes. John Oliver. Bruce Castor. David Schoen. Michael T. Vanderveen. Alex Moffat. Kate McKinnon. Mikey Day. Pete Davidson. Jar Jar Binks. Katie Turr. Jamie Raskin. Joaquin Castro. Ted Lieu. Statler and Waldorf. Patrick Leahy. Trevor Noah. Nicole Wallace. Mitch McConnell. Jimmy Kimmel. Ron Johnson. Pamela Ewing. And Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
This is Art Foray. I'm George Spencer. I was last on the air on December of 2019. A lot of things have changed since then. At that point, Pauline DiCarmo and I were once a month for 2 hours on the afternoon show. We were interviewing artists. The interviews were in detail. They were each about 50 minutes. Pauline and I are back, and we've been joined by Tom McGill. We have set up an entity called Art Foray. You'll hear more about. Recently, Tom McGill and Pauline DiCarmo did the window installation, I guess that's the best way to describe it, at the 405 Project, which is another area for community artistic activities and people to come together. Also through Art 4A, we did the protest art show at TSL in late summer, fall of 2019. And we did a reading from Joyce's Ulysses as a Bloomsday celebration, which we did on WGXC. That was 8.5 hours approximately, included music. So we're very interested in all kinds of things having to do with the arts in the Upper Hudson Valley community, and are interested in promoting anything, working, helping anybody with anything that involves a community effort to expand the reach of the arts in our community. You can follow what we're doing at our website, which is art4a.com, and that is A-R-T-E-4-A. .com. So this is going to be our first project, our first broadcast under our new name of Art 4A, and it is a series of three interviews with three very interesting sculptors, each of whom has a different take on what sculpture is, and this will be a format that we're going to use in the foreseeable future. Basically a theme-based series of interviews. So I hope you enjoy it. So the first sculptor that I'm going to be talking with is Mimi Chajka-Graminski, and she is going to tell us how she turned a natural disaster, or what could have been a natural disaster, into some extremely interesting installation. We're going to talk with Jeremy Bullis, who's going to tell us about his sculpture, which is also unique. And he's going to tell us about Window on Hudson, which is a gallery that he has recently opened, which is open to the public 24/7, and he will explain how that is possible. And we're going to be talking with Dan Devine, whose work has involved creating molds from parts of crashed cars to using dampened leather to create extremely interesting forms, which I think are going to end up in some way combined with motorcycles, which is something that he has been, motorcycles are something that he's been working on since he was 13 years old. So we have a very diverse group of artists today. I'm very glad to have with us Mimi Chaika Grominski. And we are in the Window on Hudson Gallery. I guess you call it gallery, right?
Studio space.
Yeah. It's wonderful that Jeremy Bullis has put together. You will hear from him a little bit later today. Mimi, why don't we start out and you can tell me a little bit about the show that's here and how it came about.
Great.
And it's a big undertaking.
It was a big undertaking. I found myself this spring with COVID, I found myself at home where my studio is also. At that time, we had some spring storms that took a lot of trees down. And then we realized we needed to take more trees down to prevent any of them falling on our home and studio. And so we had trees and cut logs all over the place. And they sat there for quite a while. And as I was looking at them, I just decided to play with them a little bit, which is what I kind of consider my studio practice is often. I kind of look at it as a play, you know, just kind of a playful thing to try to experiment. And so I took flour and a sifter and lace that I had found and went out there and covered a lot of the cut logs with stenciled lace. At the same time, I was also starting a new drawing practice. I started to do a study of leaves that I had in my garden and other people's gardens, and I found that really meditative. I just would sit, everything else in the world would go away, and I would concentrate on studying this one leaf and the colors and the lines and the shapes. And so there were, you know, a couple of different things happening at the same time, exploring the trees, a macro level, and then exploring the leaves on a micro level. So that's sort of where this whole exhibit came from. It came out of a sense of play, but then a sense of study and being immersed in my surroundings at the time.
I was looking at some things I found on the internet, and one of the things that seems to come up a lot is this concept of play. I know what you mean, and I guess the English language just doesn't really have exactly the right word to to describe in one word that process. But what is it?
I think part of the creative process is a good way to describe it. I look at it as kind of a, sometimes I look at my studio as a laboratory, and I gather lots of materials.
Is your studio laboratory very organized?
It's semi-organized.
Let me just press you on that. What does semi-organized mean?
I have drawers that have thread in it.
Okay.
But when I'm working on a project,
everything comes out
and goes all over the place. So in that laboratory, I collect a lot of different materials, and then one of the things that I'm doing in that playing, experimenting process is just kind of combining materials and seeing what happens with them. It's sort of I almost like to think of it in a way as a scientific experiment. Also, the creative process is kind of a meditative, as I mentioned before, process where I love to get into that state of flow where you have an idea and then you start to figure out how to do it. And then time just goes. Time and space just go and you become totally immersed in whatever that project is. And to me, that is part of the playing. It's also working. Mm-hmm. But I like to use that word as a way to kind of help me relax into the process a little bit.
Did you go to art school?
I did a bachelor's degree in studio art at Bard College.
There was one woman on the faculty.
Yes, exactly. And there were some good parts of that education, but I think it took me a while, and I've talked to other artists about this, that you have to kind of get over your art school degree to kind of make your own way and find your own voice. And it took me a little while to progress beyond what I did and what I learned, although it was a good education. I did actually learn a lot of technical things at the time. I grew up in Columbia County on a farm, a dairy farm.
Oh, really? Where?
And in Livingston.
Farming, it always seemed to me, this gets back to what you do.
Yes.
It seemed to me to be the ultimate multimedia art.
definitely.
You know, and because you have to be able to do everything.
Yes,
you know,
for sure.
I mean, if the cow gets sick, you know, maybe the vet will come, maybe he won't.
Yes.
If the tractor doesn't work,
yes,
you got to get your welding stuff up and out and weld.
For sure.
And then you became a multimedia person of all artistic trades.
So I think that influenced me without even realizing it, now that you're saying that.
How did you get started? So what did you do? You started out drawing, basically?
Just drawing, making things. I played with dolls. I always made clothes for my dolls, and sewing and knitting. And, you know, there were some handcrafts that I did.
So let me ask you about this multimedia, because, you know, I sort of am not clear on what I do.
Uh-huh, yeah.
So your ideas, where do those all come from?
I do keep a sketchbook, I keep a list, I keep a journal, and I try to just be open to different things when they pop into my head. A lot of times just within that laboratory, when I'm collecting materials, you know, ideas just come as I'm manipulating things. You know, I kind of think a little bit with my hands as I'm just working on something. The ideas come through my hands. Now I'm really looking at things more. The wind in the trees, and then the shadow on the ground, and the leaf moving in a certain way. Just, you know, I'm just really trying to pay even more attention to that.
Do you think that is a process of having been in this world quite a while?
I think that I've started to get out of my own way a little bit. The older I get, the less I'm concerned about my work being me, and the more I'm concerned about just getting the work out. And I see it as separate, more and more I see it as separate from me. My work is not me. Maybe it's something that comes through me, but it's separate. And somehow that gives me a little bit of a liberation to not feel so stressed about the work.
Have you always sort of done different things?
I have.
Goes back to being on a farm.
Yeah,
saw that going on all the time.
I've always done different things. I've never really stuck to, you know, oil painting and just done years and years of oil painting. I really go from one thing to another. And oftentimes my work is project-based. Like the show that's here at Window on Hudson, it's revolves around the trees and all of the things that were made from trees, the paper and the leaves and logs. And so that is project-based. So this is one project, and then I will go on to another project. I'm working on another project
now. What's the other project?
The other project is it's a piece that's going into a group show in Kingston, and it consists of little tiny pieces of fabric that are pinned onto foam core. Hundreds and hundreds of little slices of fabric that are probably a quarter inch to a half inch in size. And the shadows that are created as the light changes over these little particles of fabric create kind of an interesting dialogue. So that's totally separate from this piece, from this project. And then I'm not putting glass on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be...
You're going to leave the pins in.
Yeah, the pins all stay in. The pins are part of the piece. Yeah.
And so how dense in terms of space this
there,
field
there's
and
like
the face
a kind of a
not.
Pattern. There's a pattern that is happening. And I like to kind of... I think I'm titling the piece Murmuration. which I'm always fascinated with birds and how they fly and create patterns together and then mm-hmm. fly apart. Mm-hmm. And so this is kind of has a feel of that action when birds are flying together.
How big is this piece going to be?
Right now it's 32 by 40.
32 by 40.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's fairly good size.
Yeah, it is.
That's a lot of little pieces, a lot of pins.
It's a lot of little pieces.
The piece we're sitting in the middle in the window on Hudson, which is Jeremy Bullis's gallery, studio, open space. Do you think of this as an installation or as separate pieces? Or
It's kind of both. I think of it as the whole thing as one installation. There's the video, there are the drawings, there are the logs, and then there are the pieces that are in the windows. So I feel like they're all related and all, you know, one thing leads into the other. But yet they have individual elements that make up the whole.
So do you do a lot of installations? Or
I do.
You know, behind me on the wall mm-hmm. are, I don't know how many, 25?
I think there's about 40, maybe.
Is there 40?
Yeah.
Mounted on?
On like a drafting film, a vellum.
Sort of hanging, and they're not framed. Mm-hmm. And they're really gorgeous looking.
Thank you.
And my first reaction when I came in and saw them was not so much that they were leaves. That was not the first thing I mm-hmm. saw at all. What I saw was you know, these very vibrant colors.
Yes.
And
yes.
You know, and very interesting shapes. And when you're working, do you push color that hard usually? If that's the right word for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're really strong, very, very strong colors.
Yeah. I either go with very vibrant colors or no color. And for this particular work, I really, they're actually fairly realistic. These are the colors that you see in these leaves are from mostly coleus leaves.
And what they are.
Yeah,
okay.
And they have that strong pink and that strong green, which I just love those two colors.
Yes.
So they're fairly true to nature, which was very fun to play with and to draw. Because it gave me opportunity to really work with those, you know, really vibrant colors. Some are watercolor and some are pencil and some are a combination of the two.
It seems to me that light plays an important part in what you're doing. And there's a piece right here in front of us. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you would describe that, but certainly part of it is the way the light comes through it.
Yeah, I'm very interested. This particular piece is vinyl screen and a layer of vinyl screen hanging from the ceiling to the floor, and then two layers of translucent, I guess you could call it hot pink fabric behind the screen. And then as you're looking through the fabric, you see sort of a moiré effect where there's this kind of almost op art look to mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. to the different to the weave in the fabric. And I am interested in light. I am interested in looking through one thing to see to another thing. I've placed lace pieces on the screen, and then I've also sprayed a white onto the screen. So there's different opacities. Some of the things that are on the screen are very translucent, and other things are very opaque. And I really like that play of something that's opaque and something that's see-through. And I like, just, as I said, kind of playing one against the other.
The fact that you're working with light and also things that move or pieces that can be assembled differently,
mm-hmm.
so the idea of indeterminacy doesn't seem to bother you.
No, right. I did an outdoor piece with 12-foot logs that I had shown three different times. Each time that they were exhibited, the faces of the logs had gold leaf on them, and then they had crocheted wire on top of them. And they were facing different ways so that this rising sun would reflect off of the gold leaf, and then the setting sun would also reflect. So there were three or four different incarnations of that, and each time the logs got a little less, well, I guess they were a little less durable, and they got a little beaten up each time. And then finally, after I took it down, this past year, the last incarnation, I decided that was it, and I ended up taking all of the wire mesh that had created, taking it off it, and that was the end of that piece.
Now, what happened to the wire mesh?
I have that. Mm-hmm. I have that, and that I'm thinking is going to be continuing into a new incarnation.
Do you have any ideas? Then?
I do. I actually had thoughts of using it for this exhibit.
Planet of the Airways, here is my request. Show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
WGXC 90.7 FM.
You've tuned into WGXC's 10th anniversary pledge drive, and we have all sorts of special events all this month, live performances and more. Like at 8 p.m. February 18th, tune in, live performance from composer and filmmaker Phil Niblock from the Old Stone House in Brooklyn. Or Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. February 20th, tune in DJ Liam Tiger Singer, who runs High Low Cafe in the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, and he'll broadcast a set of warm music for cold months live from the Avalon Lounge at 1 p.m. February 20th with Ambient House, Tropical Melancholia, Indie Pop, Spoken Word, and more. Then at 8 p.m. Saturday, February 20th, tune in to William Hooker's Chimes, streamed live from Roulette Intermedium in Brooklyn. Chimes is a new work directed and composed by the American jazz drummer and poet William Hooker. That's at 8 p.m. February 20th on the radio at WGXC.org. Then tune in the WGXC 10th Anniversary Pledge Drive 2020 Programmer Awards from 7 to 9 p.m. Friday, February 26th on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. And please consider becoming a sustaining supporter to make sure this type of radio stays on the air for another 10 years. Keep Creative Community Radio on the air for another 10 years at wavefarm.org/donate during the WGXC 10th Anniversary Pledge Drive.
Latest reports indicate that the best protection from radioactive fallout is a shelter.
Yet less than 5% of our population has one.
Do you?
Now, from Survival, one of the nation's leading manufacturers, comes an economical combination steel and concrete block, civil defense approved fallout shelter, offering maximum protection from nuclear fallout and falling debris.
FHA approved, you need nothing down. 5 years to pay.
Will you be prepared in case of atomic attack?
Will you and your loved ones be protected from nuclear fallout and falling debris?
For your family's protection from nuclear fallout, see a Survival Shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Inga Iverson of Philmont, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM, WGXC. Like good old tap water. Just turn it on and get it.
A Lone Star State, global heating plunges Texas into a deadly deep freeze. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Texas, the proud, independent Lone Star State, is suffering a humanitarian catastrophe caused by its short-sighted denial of the climate crisis and lack of federal regulation. Warming air over the Arctic is the likely reason that the polar vortex, a huge mass of cold air over the North Pole, moves south, plunging Texas and surrounding states into an unprecedented deep freeze. Millions have been left for days without power, water, and heat, and nearly 40 people have died. A second winter storm hit the state as it reeled from the vortex. Republican Governor Greg Abbott falsely blamed the state's electrical grid failure on renewable energy.
This shows how the Green New Deal would be a deadly deal for the United States of America.
That's Governor Abbott speaking to Fox News. Even Abbott's own energy department refuted his claims. The freezing air blanketing the region did shut down about half of Texas's wind turbines, but still, that only accounted for 13% of the overall power loss. The larger cause of the catastrophe was frozen fossil fuel infrastructure, disabling coal, oil, frac gas facilities, and even nuclear power generation. Governor Abbott's lies may warm the hearts of his corporate fossil fuel donors, but they won't help the millions of Texans struggling to survive in the freezing cold, and they won't protect Texas from future extreme weather events that are sure to follow. Texas has itself largely to blame for the severity of its power grid's failure. Most of the continental United States draws power from two main electrical grids, one in the east and the other in the west. Texas, however, operates its own isolated grid, often described as an island. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt created the Federal Power Commission in 1935 as part of the New Deal to regulate interstate electricity. Texas power companies rebelled and decided to go it alone, keeping the state's grid entirely in state. The system developed over the decades into ERCOT, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. As the largest state by area in the lower 48, and with significant oil, gas, and coal within its borders, and plenty of sun and wind, Texas is perhaps better positioned than any other state to attempt energy independence. But the devil is in the details. ERCOT touts its freedom from federal regulation and devotion to the free market for its success over the decades. Texas energy officials endlessly brag about ERCOT's ability to power all the state's air conditioners during its famously hot summers. But there's never been any incentive for power producers to spend money winterizing their facilities. As this week's Arctic cold shut down power plants across the state, Texas could not draw electricity from out-of-state sources, creating a cascade of calamities disproportionately hitting low-income communities and communities of color.
We are the lone star state.
That's Professor Robert Bullard, known as the father of environmental justice, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour from Houston soon after his power had been restored.
The impact of this storm is more than just power outages and inconveniences for those communities that historically have been impacted by energy insecurity, energy poverty.
Cities and towns across Texas are issuing boil notices as water treatment plants go offline. But many families can't boil water without electricity. Stories are surfacing of people breaking apart furniture to burn for heat. Again, Professor Robert Bullard.
And I think people who are suffering right now and hurting with no power, no money, no water, no form of transportation to get to the grocery store to get water, where there is no water, bottled water in the stores or food. They want to see action and answers, and there will even the officials are calling for an investigation, but a real investigation would actually start pointing back to individuals that are in charge. And so I think the idea of Texas not being part of the union has really been a textbook example of how not to do it. We are a failed state right now.
This is happening in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. Texans are flocking to crowded indoor warming centers, risking possible exposure to the coronavirus in search of heat. Meanwhile, the already stressed vaccine distribution networks have been shut down and vaccination centers shuttered. It's unclear how many doses of the refrigeration-dependent vaccines will have to be tossed out because of Texas's failed independent power grid. Texas is also the nation's biggest jailer, where prisoners are being especially hard hit. Lack of heat, running water, and food shortages are worsening already desperate conditions. Texas's elected leaders, from Governor Greg Abbott, U.S. Senators Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, to Attorney General Ken Paxton, all Republicans, are also committed climate change deniers. As the thaw comes slowly to Texas and the heat, lights, and water turn back on, Texans will have to decide to join the global community fighting human-caused climate disruption or to insist on going it alone, come hell or high water. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes?
Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu, up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Daily News. I'm Philip Graham. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. The Assembly GOP on Thursday, February 15th, moved to begin impeachment proceedings against Governor Andrew Cuomo as the controversy surrounding nursing homes during the COVID-19 pandemic continue. The resolution, as proposed by Republicans, would create an impeachment commission to investigate the governor's handling of nursing homes and efforts to conceal data of resident fatalities during the pandemic. A 60-day deadline would be set for the commission to conduct its work and release findings to lawmakers. Assembly Minority Leader Will Barclay said, and I quote, "Cuomo administration's nursing home cover-up is one of the most alarming scandals we've seen in state government," end quote. Cuomo has acknowledged his office should have moved faster to release data on nursing home deaths during the pandemic, but said it first had to respond to a federal inquiry last year. A Cuomo ally, State Democrat Chairman Jay Jacobs, blasted the impeachment move. Jacobs said in an interview, and I quote, "I think it's the height of hypocrisy for a group that was silent when a Republican president was referring to the pandemic as a Democrat hoax and threatening to withhold PPE and other vital supplies to New York State. We heard nothing from them," end quote. Senate Democrats are expected to soon scale back Cuomo's power granted last year to respond to the pandemic. Assembly Democrats are expected to discuss that issue on Monday in a closed-door meeting. In New York history, only one governor, William Sulzer, in 1913, has ever been impeached and removed from office. And you can read the full story in nystateofpolitics.com. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Green County lawmakers approved the 2021 contract with Twin County Recovery Service February 17th after initial concern that the county would have to make up the difference caused by a proposed 20% state aid cut. There was also worry over a $19,000 increase in the contract and if services had been reduced due to the pandemic. Republican legislator James Davis said at the Health Services Committee meeting, and I quote, "I see they are raising their budget this year. All I've heard on the news this whole year is that substance abuse users have been having problems because services have been cut. So why is the budget going up?" End quote. Greene County Director of Mental Health Jason Friedenberg said services have not been cut at this point. Friedenberg said the increase was due to cost of living adjustments, and it is awarded by the state for fringe increases. Greene County Administrator Sean Groden said if the county does not get reimbursed the 20% from the state, it would not pay the full value of the contract each quarter. He said, and I quote, if the 20% is going to be cut, we would not have paid that out to begin with. This is pass-through money, end quote. He went on to say, and I quote, if we don't get it, we don't pay it out, end quote. The full legislature later unanimously approved the contract. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Mako is reporting for Porcupine Soup. Kelly's Pharmacy in Greenville will likely be granted a zoning variance for the COVID-19 testing pod now located in its parking lot, according to town attorney Tal Rapalia. The setback variance is scheduled to be voted on at the March 9th meeting of the Greenville Zoning Board of Appeals. The setback is required under town law because the pod is located too close to the firehouse. The pod is located in the last two parking spots behind the pharmacy. Rapalia said, and I quote, I'm pretty sure the ZBA is going to approve it, end quote. Pharmacist Quinn Kelly said that when they installed the pod in December, they were under the impression it did not require a building permit. But under town law, it does. The pod sits approximately 24 feet from the firehouse, and the concrete buffers next to the pod, installed to keep vehicles from hitting it, measure roughly 22 feet from the firehouse. The property is owned by Tasting Lab owner, ZBA Chairman Thomas Vance. Vance is also a pharmacy neighbor, and he provided written permission for the pod to be installed. He said Vance will recuse himself from voting on the variance. The pod is used to conduct COVID-19 testing outside of the pharmacy itself to keep potentially ill people away from the public. Kelly said close to 1,500 tests have been conducted at the location since January when they opened the pod. Approximately 12% of those tests have come back positive, he said. And you can read the full story in Porcupine Soup. And that wraps up the WGXC Daily News. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, a chance of snow showers mainly between noon and 5 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 31 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a temperature low of around 15 degrees. And on Sunday, sunny with a high near 33 degrees. And Sunday night, a slight chance of snow showers after 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 18 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
This is really me now. No more hiding. Listen, we're all worried. We're all in pain. That comes with having eyes, with having ears. But just remember one thing. It can't get any worse. It can only get better. Quitting is not going to make you strong. Living will. So just hang on and hang in there. You know, I know all about the hating and the sneering. I'm a member of the Why Bother generation myself. But why did I bother to come out here tonight? And why did you? I mean, it's time. It begins with us, not with politicians, the experts, or the teachers, but with us. With you and with me, the ones who need it most. I believe, with everything that's in me, that the whole world is longing for healing. Even the trees. The earth itself are crying out for it. You can hear it everywhere. Same kind of healing I desperately needed and finally feel has begun with you.
those old sayings still the same. If you don't fall, then you can't complain. But you wonder after all these years, could one word put a stop to all the tears? Tears of frustration, tears of loss, tears of oppression, tears of the cross. It's easy to hide on the web, not so easy when you're on the other end.
This ain't no 3D movie.
come again. Just when I've begun to get myself together, you waltz right in the door, just like you've done before, and wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again. Just when I'm about to make it work without you, you look into my eyes and lie those pretty lies, and pretty soon I'm wondering.
Crush, but that doesn't mean